communities to create a world free of xenophobia and racism, a world from which poverty has been expunged and the availability of food is not subject to the demands of capitalist profit. I would say a world where a corporation like Monsanto would be deemed criminal. Where homophobia and transphobia can truly be called historical relics, along with the punishment of incarceration and institutions of confinement for disabled people, and where everyone learns how to respect the environment and all of the creatures, human and non-human alike, with whom we cohabit our worlds. Thank you very much.
The time is 11 a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And please support KBOO during our fall membership drive when you call 877-500-5266. Support this crucial lifeline between all members of the community that provides, well, it connects all the various struggles for self-determination, for justice, such as
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Saturday, September 23rd at the Jade Apano Multicultural Space in Portland. The East Portland Arts and Literary Festival is a full-day festival led by artists of color exploring what it means to immigrate, migrate, and find home. The festival will include visual art, film, performances, storytelling, plus a book and craft fair with local writers and creators. Again, that's the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Saturday, September 23rd, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Jade Apano Multicultural Space, 8114 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO would like to give a special thanks to our local community partner who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Cafe 11, located at 435 Northeast Rosa Parks Way, a family-friendly coffee shop in the Woodlawn neighborhood of Northeast Portland. Dinner was provided by Dean Nicola's, located at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland, and serving Italian food for over 40 years. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
That is how you support KBOO, with your pledge of financial support at 877-500-5266. And speaking of food, of what and how we eat and why, here is Pacific Underground with local writer Stacy Tran speaking on food, family, and identity, with your hosts, Kanan Schlesinger and Jenna Yokoyama, who we'll be hearing from later on to remind us of how and why to support KBOO. And now, Pacific Underground.
So, we all eat a lot of food, but, like, how often do we get together around, like, one dish, or even maybe several courses, and use the food as a vehicle to discuss stuff like identity and family, or, if you're feeling up for it, colonialism, racism, and class privilege? Or just share stories that might or might not tie loosely into the reasons we came together to eat in the first place. I don't know. I'm just talking. I know that recently you did something like this, Jenna, because I'm pretty sure I was there, and it was a dinner, if I'm not mistaken, a dinner for Yonsei's.
It was.
What is a Yonce?
We're Yonce. Boom. Yes, like we're Yonce. Yonce are fourth generation Japanese Americans. And recently my sister and I decided to throw a sukiyaki with Yonce dinner. Basically, we just invited every Yonce that we knew in Portland, which is probably all of them. So like all 10 of us showed up and we had this big kind of like family style hot pot, and everyone brought different ingredients, and like we shared stories and met people for the first time, and it was totally chill. Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was such a wonderful experience to just have my perspective checked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of those things where it's like, "Oh, wow. Like I really, in order to like be present here and like take this information in, I need to like really own where I'm at and own this feeling of wishing that I had more to share, more to identify with." But we even had a gose there. Gose.
Dude, we had two.
We had two goses.
Yeah, two fifth generation kids who like sat around and like ignored all of us because like we were way lame. We were the adults.
They probably had a better time than we did.
Oh, they totally had a good time. They were like making mochi and like sitting on the couch by themselves and just totally just ignoring us. I loved it. They were so cute. But just literally sitting around with people who had all those things in common with me but like weren't my family, and we were taking this time to intimately get to know one another, that was a really new experience for me as a, like a Japanese person. And I never thought that really mattered until we did it, and I realized like, wow, really making this space where people can open up and not have to code switch and not have to worry and can be focused on this one side of themselves that they never get to focus in on. I was wondering if other people found that to be a powerful thing, but I thought it was for myself, even if it was just like for a moment, like, and I totally want to do it again.
And the sukiyaki was like such a big part of it. Like the food that was present on the table. Like if we were eating pizza, that would have been a very different night.
Oh yeah, I know.
You know?
It was a really conscious choice that we decided to have a sukiyaki dinner. You know, it wasn't that it was just a Japanese meal, but that it was a kind of meal where everybody had to bring their own item to contribute to the hot pot. And so that when you saw this meal, it was a reflection of everyone at the table, you know, and it was a reflection of kind of our Japanese Americanness too, you know. So this extension was literally, we were like giving ourselves to one another and like, you know, and our culture. And like, we were defining for ourselves what our culture is.
That's the power of food, I guess, for you. I'm really excited about this episode in particular, and the process of editing it was really, really fun because I got to revisit the conversation and kind of think more on these themes of like food and identity and race. We talked to Stacy Tran, who has been working on this relatively new project. I think it's been around since like February of 17, called Tender Table. And it's like a public version of a potluck, only it's for telling stories. And it gets heavy because it's like origin stories, identity stories, oppression stories. It centers the experiences of women of color and gender non-conforming folks of color. You know, for folks who are like so important, they're not celebrated nearly enough. They're like chronically being erased in the way we use language. So it's not the norm, you know, it's like so necessary. So yeah, I went to a Tender Table event recently with V. It was lovely. It was a very good experience. Have you been to one, Jenna?
Mm-mm.
Have you heard anything about them? Have you talked to anyone about them?
All I know is that everybody who goes to one of those events really loves the experience and always says they can't wait to go to another one, so I need to get to one.
Well, I bet you there's one in your future.
Go to the next one.
So, yeah, without much more ado, we should just get into the interview. I feel super honored to have been able to speak with Stacy. Me and my co-producer, V, sat down with her the other week, and we started off by talking about identity, and we asked how Stacy identifies.
I feel like you can hear me breathing when I go.
I'll worry about that.
Yeah, okay,
later.
Cool.
You'll edit out every single segment.
Every single inhale.
It's funny because I ask each of the presenters for Tender Table to do that, to give a one-line description of yourself, however you wish to describe yourself. And I think that's an attempt to bypass like the formality or like the institutionalized bio that we're so used to giving. I really like how Keon Gaskin, who's an artist here, and their bio for their TBA performance this week is that Keon Gaskin does not want to use their credentials to inform the viewer of their artwork, or, you know, a version of that, which I think is really cool. Last year, Keon used just like a black box for the performance photo that goes in the TBA book. And so I'm really interested in how people self-describe or self-identify. And I'm interested in that about Tender Table. And I hope that comes across. Yeah, I guess that's my bio. I don't know.
That's what your bio would be if you were filling out a Tender Table submission.
Yeah, my bio would just be, I love other people's non-bios.
I'm curious how you would, I guess, identify.
I identify as, just like on basic terms, a woman. I go by she, her. I have started to prefer referring to other people as they, just as a new standard.
To not misgender people.
Yeah, or using their name more, like whatever they prefer going by as their name. And that I feel is like an exercise every single day. So I identify through the exercises that I take, like thinking about food and writing about them as like extensions of our body. I'm Vietnamese. Both my parents are Vietnamese. I was born in Portland. So I identify as a bilingual Vietnamese and English speaker, which is something I've been thinking about more in my writing, and I've started self-translating my writing from English to Vietnamese, which is really challenging to do, but like also really fulfilling. It's interesting to think about like all the difficulties of translating one's own thoughts across languages. And I've been working with a translator, Nha Thuyen, who is an editor for Ajar Press in Hanoi. And it's been awesome because she's been helping me translate things that I didn't have the words for and just kind of like skipped over. And she's like, why didn't you translate that? Why did you write that differently? And I was like, I don't know, because that sentiment uses different words in a different language. And she's like, yeah, okay, like that's kind of a cool way to translate too. And so it's been really validating to have another set of eyes on my own translation of my work. And I started translating my writing as an attempt to bring my family closer to my writing, because I think it's really hard to describe to my, you know, parents who were refugees in the 80s from Vietnam, who worked really hard to have this life where I can have the luxury of writing poetry, you know, and like going to art events and thriving in this type of community, for them to understand what it is that I do. And if they're able to read my writing in a more intimate manner in their language, I think they'll get a lot more out of it. And I think that's been true. So that's been a really fun journey.
That's so cool that your parents are supportive of your poetry and your writing. How were they? I mean, because I'm Vietnamese too, and I can imagine how my parents would have reacted if I were to tell them, oh, I'm going to be a writer. They'd probably have a meltdown. How have they been, like, I guess, receptive to your career choice?
Yeah, it's been interesting because they always knew that I wouldn't be a doctor or a lawyer or a pharmacist, even though when I was in second grade, you know, career day, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I was like, I'm going to be a pharmacist. JK. And I was like kind of into the idea, like there was always a way to romanticize
what it would be like to be an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was a writer in high school. My lit teachers always, you know, gave me really good feedback, and I shared that enthusiasm with my parents, and I think they knew where my strengths were. And I think that they tried, like, when I was in grade school and middle school, I was so bad at math. And they put me in, like, math tutoring, like, each weekend. That's how I would spend my weekends, in between violin lessons and math tutors. And I was just like,
They really wanted you to be, like, the perfect
they
model
wanted
minority.
Me to be good at life. They wanted me to, like, be a good person and have, like, useful STEM skills, you know?
Yeah. Which includes math and violin.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Basic
My parents
human
were the same.
Needs.
You're listening to, well, us. Hey, I'm Jenna, and I'm joined with Kanan, and you're listening to our show, Pacific Underground. And, you know, you are listening during our fall membership drive, and it's time to become a member of CABE. If you like what you're listening to, you do like what you're listening to, because you were just listening to the whole thing. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Because this is the programming that you believe in. And you know what, Kanan, we actually just kind of figured out something significant about our show, huh?
Yeah, yeah, guess what? In case you're not convinced already that you need to be calling in, we realize that we are one of the only shows of our kind in that we are a radio show. We are Asian American, and we're speaking from a perspective in elevating other people that are Asian American. And you'd think that there would be a lot more shows, like in California, where there are a lot of Asian American people.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be a handful of shows, but apparently there's not a handful of shows. There's like three shows. Like, there's a bunch of podcasts out there, kind of. But in terms of this programming, this type of programming, where you are hearing from the Asian American and Pacific Islander communities, bringing you that first-person perspective, it's actually really unique. And we find that to be something that's really significant about KABU, that KABU just, they say, hey, what's missing? What are the voices that are missing? And KABU says, hey, we're going to give you a platform. And we took that platform, and we hope that you're enjoying this, that you are getting a lot from it, because you literally cannot get this other places. This is something that's so important and significant about KABU. So that's what you want. You want to be hearing these perspectives that you literally are not hearing other places. Support that. Give us a call, 877-500-5266, or go online to kbo.fm and click on the donate button.
Oh, I see. You need more convincing. Okay. So today is News and Public Affairs Day, which means that every dollar that you give is going to be doubled. So you're going to be
it's
able to
matched.
Double your impact, double your appreciation for how unique this type of programming is. You know, you don't get this anywhere else. I know we keep saying that, and at this point, you're probably really close to turning the dial, but I think that you probably want to turn your attention to the fact that by even calling in, even if you just renew your membership and you're already a member, you enter the chance to, you enter a drawing for a prize. We have a daily prize. And today's drawing is for the Northwest Premier Environmental Film Festival. You can win a total of 10 pairs of tickets to the Portland Eco Film Festival, and that's at the Hollywood Theater. And so this is happening every day, but today that's the specific prize. But that's not why you should be calling in. You should be calling in because you value this type of radio and you value these voices and you're enjoying what you're hearing. So dial right now, 877-500-5266. And if you're listening to us online, that's amazing, terrific, tremendous. Go to kboo.fm/give.
You know, when we were looking this up and we were wondering to ourselves, like, we can't be the only Asian American Pacific Islander voice out there. And it was, I don't know, when we first started talking about how rare our show actually is, it became, I don't know, just so much more significant to me of like what it is that we're doing here. You know, our show is on twice a month, and we were originally on just once a month, and KBOO gave us a second hour because they said, we need more of those kinds of voices. We need your perspective. This is what needs to be brought to KBOO, are the underserved voices. Like, you know, here in Portland, the Asian Pacific Islander community is very small, and yet KBOO understands. They say, you and your perspective and your first person perspective, your lived experience is significant. It is important to share with the community. And you believe in that. How else, you know, are we connected as a community? It's to fully understand one another from one another's first person perspective, to respect one another's ideas. And that's what KBOO is allowing us. We're bringing this to you. This is what you want. 877-500-5266. Show yourself. Show your community. What are the voices that you want to hear? Maybe you're not Asian or Pacific Islander, but you understand the significance of understanding those communities that are around you, that affect you, that you affect. 877-500-5266.
How much are you relying on stereotypes right now to understand Asian American people? Ask yourself that. Maybe you haven't recently. I don't know. yeah, it's really critical to give back at this point, because, you know, we didn't ask to be the rarity that we are. You know, we didn't ask to be in this position of like, we don't particularly enjoy being in the position of being like one of the few Asian American voices that's on the radio waves.
Being tokens,
it's inherently tokenizing, because and that's not a coincidence. That's not just that's a structural problem.
But you know what? I will take being a token if it means that I get to bring these voices. I'm so appreciative of KBOO that they say, hey, you're going to be one of very few voices, but it's a significant voice, and it's a voice that needs to be heard. And we appreciate all of our listeners that say, yeah, this is significant. I'm going to keep tuning in. This is what I want to hear. So, you know, take advantage of News and PA's matching day today. Every dollar that you donate is going to be matched. Show how you believe in having a diversity of voices, how you believe in having that first-person perspective so that you can really understand the communities around you. 877-500-5266. We're trying to raise $240 this hour. That's just a few callers. That's all. We just need a few listeners to call in and show how much you appreciate what KBOO brings to you. We appreciate it. 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm and you can just click on that donate button. So simple.
Do it. We want to hear from you.
I think what it boils down to is being a good person means you're conscientious and you're observant and you're a good listener. And only then would you be able to reflect someone else's care for you.
I really love that description and that definition of what it is to be a good person. Because, I mean, especially in my family, I know, and with a lot of other Vietnamese families too, that there's so little language for tender moments mm-hmm. like that, and for expressing emotion and connecting with one another, that, yeah, like the small gestures really mean a lot more than what they are. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of intention in that.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate to that a lot.
So you said you were born and raised and you're now living in Portland. What is that like, especially as a woman of color?
Mm-hmm. Well, I walk a lot and I take the bus. So that experience, I think, is different than other people's, maybe. Yeah, I notice it a lot in terms of how my personal space has become closer or smaller. Like, I think I recently formed a mild claustrophobia, and I like don't have fun at dance parties because it's a bunch of white people around me. But that's okay, because I have white friends, and my partner's white, and I love all different types of people. But there, you know, there's a sense of, like, safety that has been zapped of, I think, Portland in a way that maybe I wasn't as aware of before, because, you know, I was raised by my relatives, and I was always around people who looked like my parents, and That felt really safe in an obvious way. It's like, oh, you look like me, you eat the same food that I do, you speak a similar language to me, you have the same sense of humor as I do, you know? And like, I think that's why my parents still have a lot of Vietnamese friends, because it reminds them of where they came from and it's really comforting to them. And I'm trying to find that again too, in different ways. Like, I'm trying to find more artists, and I'm trying to find more people who write things other than poetry. You know, like, I write poetry, but I am really interested in other types of writing and different thinkers and, you know, women of color who are, you know, thinking about these things. And I am able to find them in Portland, which I feel really lucky about. And I try to focus on that. You know, I go to work and I walk around these people that I don't know, and they don't look like me, and they don't have the same sense of humor as I do, and they don't eat the same food that I do. But, you know, that's just, that happens when you live in a city. I don't really know. It's growing really differently, really quickly than I think that I would hope for my home. But, you know, that happens. On another day, you asked me the same question, I would have a different answer. Yeah, but I think, like, the space thing has been there's a real clear divide that I feel sometimes. I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it. It's, like, kind of discombobulating to think about. But I really love that stretch of Sandy where, like, all the Vietnamese businesses are, and the noodle shops, and I love that. Like, don't take that away from me, you know?
Well, Portland loves Vietnamese food, so hopefully not.
It doesn't seem to matter who's making it, though.
It doesn't, unfortunately. But a lot of the Vietnamese shops on Sandy and 82nd are still Vietnamese-owned, so that's good, and I hope it stays that way.
Yep.
I guess I'm a little curious about the Vietnamese community in Portland. So I'm new here, and I don't have, like, very much awareness of, you know, the diaspora here, if it's tight-knit or not, and it sounds like your parents have a good community around them.
I was raised more in Beaverton, and my parents still live there, and they go to church, and their church friends are Vietnamese, and I think a lot of Vietnamese people here who are my parents' age bond over that. It's a very, like, deeply embedded cultural thing to, like, find your religion as, you know, I mean, they were going through a lot. Like, I understand why religion is really important to them. Like, a spiritual life is their core, you know? And so I think it's funny because, like, when you go to an Asian market on the weekends, everything is sold out. Because all the moms and dads and uncles and aunties are going to grocery shops after they get out of church, you know? Like,
Sunday's the day.
Yep. So I remember being a kid and, like, going to Portland with my parents to get groceries, and, like, you would have to beat the crowd because it was a really popular day for people to be out. Like, Sunday was their resting day. Like, they went to church and then got groceries and then made food and then had their whole family over, you know, like, and that was the one day that they did that week. It's really familiar to, like, think of produce and all the people who are standing in the produce aisle, like, in that certain light, you know, on that kind of Saturday early afternoon, Sunday early afternoon, I guess.
Yeah, my parents did the same thing on Sundays, and it was always fun to watch them interact with, like, the grocery attendant, and they were so close to them because it was, like, a weekly tradition.
Yeah, but as for, like, younger folks, I think we're all, like, trying to find each other, you know?
I think so, too. I mean, I've spoken to a couple of other Vietnamese folks in Portland, and it all seems like we're all searching for the same thing, trying to find community amongst ourselves, but not knowing how to hold space or how to find each other. And that's something that I really love about Tender Table, because it's bringing people together around food, which is such an important and integral part about like connecting with your culture.
That's how we met.
That is how we met.
So, case in point.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to meet young Vietnamese people who are trying to relearn Vietnamese, the language. And most of it is learned through food. Like, I think food is a really great way to access culture. I mean, a lot of people will agree with this. And I think specifically, you know, there's a narrative that goes with why this herb with this sauce with this, you know, lime and not lemon and, you know, coriander and like this very specific combo of things, you know, go together, just like you would tell a poem or a story where all the pieces and the characters fit together. It never occurred to me that Vietnamese food is very resemblant of fables. So the fact that you can make a dish this exact way with like all of those ingredients, like you have to have all the right things, is just like all the characters and the axioms that a fable would have. There's something funny that my mom said about like the zodiac signs. Like, you know, the zodiac signs all have like different they have like different relationships towards each other, just like in astrology. And my mom said this funny thing that I still don't know what it means. She's like, well, you know, if the tiger goes looking for the pig, it won't come home.
And I'm like, what's that supposed to mean?
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. Good morning. I'm Jenna.
I'm Kanan.
And you're listening to our show, Pacific Underground. We're the hosts of the show, and we're also pitching this morning to talk about our fall membership drive. Give us a call here at membership central 877-500-5266. Again, that number is 877-500-5266. You're tuned in on News and PA Day, a day where we're highlighting all of our public affairs programs and I don't know, maybe I'm a little biased, but Pacific Underground might be my favorite public affairs show. Maybe just a little biased. But so if you appreciate it, which you do because you're listening, and you know, you tune in every month to listen to our show. You know you do. There's those people who are listening right now like, oh, hey, look, there's Jenna and Kanan. Give us a call. Become a member of KBOO today, 877-500-5266.
Maybe you need something a little bit more concrete than that. Say you give $10 a month. That's $120 a year. That is actually not that much money. If you do decide to pledge at that amount, we have a little gift, and that gift ties directly into the interview that you've been listening to. It's a little chapbook. If you don't know what a chapbook is, look it up. It's called A List of Herbs I Want You to Taste in My Mind in Another Language. It's going to be mentioned later on in the interview if it hasn't been already. It's lovely. It's kind of like a prelude to a book that's coming out next year that's called Soap for the Dogs. It's going to be a full-length book. A chapbook is kind of somewhere between like a little mini book and a zine. And it's beautiful. It's one poem. It's long, though, and it's beautifully printed.
Oh, yeah, and it's by our guest.
It's by our guest, Stacey Tran. So if you've been enjoying this, give us a call and show that you're listening, show that you're appreciating what you're hearing and that you really value the uniqueness of this program. Because as we were saying earlier, this doesn't exist in every city. This exists very few other places.
Yeah, it doesn't even exist in every region. For what we can find, there's maybe one other show in the United States, and it's on the East Coast, that is a show that is focused towards the Asian and Pacific Islander American community, where, you know, it's not just discussions about the Asian American community. It is stories that come from the API community, where we're sharing our first person perspective. Yeah, we're making these stories for each other, but we're also making these stories and putting out these stories so that the wider community can have, I don't know, kind of a look into what is the API experience here in the United States. And that's a significant thing, you know, for people to be able to have a place to come to be able to hear perspectives that aren't your own, or maybe they are yours, and you appreciate being able to hear your voice or a similar voice that is those stories that you understand here on the radio. Give us a call, 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm. We have a goal of $240 this hour. You know, so, you know, if you can, we always say maybe 1 hour's wage. If you're making about like $10 an hour, our minimum wage just about here in Portland, you know, consider giving that over once a month to KBOO, because this is the kind of programming that you want to be hearing on the air. And you can get our thank you gift, that A List of Herbs by Stacy Tran, the guest that you've been listening to. And you can also be entered into our daily drawing for the Northwest Premier Environmental Film Festival, the Eco Film Fest. You'll get 10 pairs of tickets. So just give us a call or go on to kboo.fm for the rules and restrictions.
It's feeling a little cavernous in here, y'all. I don't hear any phones ringing.
I know.
I can kind of hear myself bouncing off the walls, my voice. I am also drinking too much coffee, so I'm almost bouncing off the walls physically. But, you know, our show historically underperforms in terms of bringing in money, and we would like to see that there are people who are listening, that we know are listening, that care about this show enough to call in. So dial us at 877-500-5266. Let's get back to the show.
It seems like there's a lot of connection between food and your writing. And I guess I'm curious, like, how that comes up in your writing or in the kind of community events that you're putting together. It seems like those two are very closely entwined for you.
Mm-hmm. I know that smell is a really key way to like remember things. And I think similarly, taste is a really particular way of remembering things. Like, I don't know, do you ever get this sense of like smelling watermelon in the air, like on certain crisp autumn days, and you're like, why does it smell like a watermelon out here? I'm just going to work and it smells like a watermelon.
I don't know if I've ever smelled that. When I think of watermelon, I think of the beach or like a park.
Yeah. Yeah, I think of watermelon as like something clean. Like you just cut into one and it's like
crisp.
So fresh.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so I think a lot about how, you know, my parents have associations with certain herbs, or, you know, my dad really loves this heart-shaped herb that's called zupga, and it's like kind of fishy, and it's like this really nice lime green color. My mom grows it in her garden. Mm-hmm. So here's another thing. It's like my mom grows all these things in her garden that we eat, you know, which is so cool. Yeah, she's amazing. And my dad is trying to like catch her drift by like, he's trying to grow plums and like he's trying to grow grapes. And yeah, I don't think he's really got a green thumb. sorry, Dad. But he's really good at other things, like building the things for my mom's squash to hang onto and like grow off of, you know, so they make a really good team. And I think they care a lot about food. And I think that was like a basic vocabulary for me, probably predating like spoken or written language, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's like creeping back in, like I can pick something like a food or a dish or some ingredient, it'll spark something for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't really know how to describe that. It's just kind of like infused in my blood somehow. But I can try to find something to read.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Oh, here's a good one that I could read.
Yeah, if you'd like to read it. Yeah.
So, backstory. I don't know if you were at the tender table where my mom presented.
I wasn't.
Yeah. She talked about sambolung, the dessert, which has like all these little dried fruits in it, and this raw, not raw, I was going to say simple syrup. And so simple syrup base with a bunch of fruit and seaweed. And my mom told this story about like this fresh seaweed that she went to get at the Oregon coast. and how it was like this whole journey. And I never knew that about the one ingredient that goes in this like collage of things in a dessert. You know, it's like a dessert cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
And I was describing it to someone, and this poem came out of it. And it's called Survival Number. Over breakfast, I describe it to her as green glass hair, which we braid at the bottom of the sea. In order to go there, first we gather tiny green apples, a necklace of dried lotus seeds around a new bride's neck, 8 cartfuls of longan and lychee, unsweetened, an arm's length of pearl barley laid out on a cloth, the width of the store we walked through. 5 women carrying mung beans in their mouths, crossing a sea of milk they fed to their children. Each bean softens with her migration through trauma. A handful of dried dates that have fallen from your eyelids. A swimming pool of snow fungus knotted up like a net. 100 haircuts worth of kelp. My grandfather in his wheelchair eclipsed by a mountain of ginseng, rock sugar melting gold across the grainy fields. And then the one after that is like kind of funny, so I figure I should read that too.
Yes.
It's also called Survival Number. I want to be soft when gently pressed between your thumb and index finger. A generation eats salt. The future thirsts for water. A father feeds his daughter Costco meatballs in a paper bowl. Her mother splits open a rambutan with her teeth. We made rings out of longan seeds for our tiny fingers. With a shoestring, we pulled a piece of bark, an immortal pet. We grow up being taught to eat outside of the box. Can you believe the only option for rice in California grocery stores for a while was Zatarain's? A trumpet for a son. Certainty reincarnated as chicken hearts cooked in bitter greens. Super top dining room. A man walks down the street at night pulling a cart of steamed peanuts, drumming a chopstick on a metal lid of a pot, striking midnight. So there's like a whole book of that coming out in spring.
And it's called Soap for the Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of concerned my stomach was going to growl while you were reading.
I know. I was like, I want so many things right now. Like, we should just go eat after this.
We should.
I like how emotions and feelings and really, I guess, borderline spiritual connections are tied in with food and quantities of food that are tied to things like haircuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I was thinking about that line exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting to measure in times of scarcity too. Like, I think a lot about, you know, I wrote about this in A List of Herbs. Just, you know, being so poor that you can only look at a picture of a fish and imagine you're eating a fish. You know, like you can't even afford to have fish. You have to afford it by way of your imagination, you know. And, you know, only being able to smoke like the butts of cigarettes because you're so addicted, but you can only afford to smoke what you've already smoked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I write about my mom, who, when she was pregnant with me, was craving venison. But the weird thing was she never had it before.
Huh.
And she was like, "You gotta go get me venison." My dad was like, "I don't know where to get that. Where do you go get venison?" This is like 1991, you know?
Did she eventually get her venison?
I don't know. It's funny because I think... eventually she and my dad befriended someone who was a hunter like many years later, and they gave my parents some venison, and they're like, "How do we cook this?" Because it's not a Vietnamese thing.
Mm-mm.
Did it taste how she thought it would taste?
I don't know. I wonder if they even ate it. I wonder what they did with it.
Maybe it's still in the freezer.
That's so funny. I wouldn't be surprised because my mom has two freezers.
Like that's a dedicated so freezer?
Mm-hmm. A dedicated freezer to, you know, she'll go to the grocery store. She'll stock up on stuff and be like, oh, I can freeze this and use it in a month. Mm-hmm. You know?
My mom does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Membership Central. Mm-hmm. You're listening to prior versions of us, editions in the same dimension, but earlier in time. I'm Kanan.
And I'm Jenna. We're the hosts of Pacific Underground. Also, people who are pitching to you right now to talk about our fall membership drive. If you're ready to become a member of KBOO today, which you are because you're listening and you are really digging what you're hearing, I know you are, give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. We have a goal of $240 for this hour. Help us get that number down. Help us fulfill that number. Because today is News and PA Day, which means that we have some very generous supporters here of KBOO who are matching dollar for dollar every dollar that comes in today. So today is the perfect day to become a member so that you can maximize your membership.
And really, we're just waiting for one more caller to call in. We're really close to our goal, and we just need a little bit more help to fulfill it. And you know what? You need more voices on the radio, and KBOO makes that happen. There's over 170 people a year that learn to tell their stories over the air with the basics of audio production, which you can learn at KBOO, which KBOO teaches. And you know, that's how Jenna and I got our start.
That's right.
And KBOO offers that resource, and KBOO also offers the platform that makes this show kind of one of a kind. It's not necessarily, maybe it's trite to say, but it's also true. So if you have, you know, a little bit of time and you can renew your membership or you can become a member, and this is like maybe the opportunity for you, give us a call at 877-500-5266. Help us reach that hourly goal. We are really close, and we just need a few more people to call in or to just go on the web at kboo.fm and or kboo.fm/give. And there's a very conspicuous button that you can press, and
the donate button,
and it's easy.
You know, in our last few seconds here of pitching, I'm just going to put it out there. Pacific Underground, we have never met our hourly goal. And this is our goal today. Mm-hmm. And because we want to say, like, you know, we know that Asian and Pacific Islanders are like the smallest percentage of people here in Portland. But we know that we have supporters. We know that because we have people who come up to us and say, oh my gosh, you're Pacific Underground. I love your show. Thank you for sharing that perspective. Thank you for telling me what the API story here is in Portland, here on the West Coast. So help us. Help us do that, because this is what you want. This is the kind of programming that you find enriching to your listening lives. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Have your donation matched right now. Give us a call, 877-500-526, or go online to kboo.fm.
You know, I tell the presenters, you know, bring 20 Costco sample sizes of, you know, this dish that you make, just so people can get a taste of the story that you were telling us. Yeah, it's been really rewarding to see and meet these people who are either presenting that I hadn't met before, or, you know, showing up to events and supporting these presenters and hearing these stories. It's been really lovely.
How was it trying to find people to present at Tender Table? Was that difficult, or did it end up being quite easy?
I have a very long list of people So I made a list of people, and I was like, these would be awesome people to have. And now I keep adding to the list as the events go by. And I keep meeting people, and I keep realizing, oh, I know that person. They haven't presented yet. I'm going to keep bugging them to do it. And yeah, I think it really like encourages people to think about what story they would tell. Like, a lot of times I'll like bug my friends about it, and I'll be like, you're going to tell a story at this someday. And they're like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm going to have a story. Like, you have so many stories. You just have to, like, commit to doing it and it'll come out. You know, like, my mom was so freaked out. Like, she had never done any public speaking. And, you know, she got up there and she was, like, kind of shaking. And it sounded like she was going to cry or something, like stage fright. And I was just like, uh-oh. Like, what did I do to my mom? And then she, like, heard the first laugh from the audience because she said something kind of funny. And she's like, oh, I can relax now. Like, I've been accepted. Like, they're listening. What I'm saying is awesome. And I'm like, yeah. Like, isn't this what you want to hear from me? Like, don't you want to hear praise and, like, know that I appreciate you? So I feel like the series is also a way of praising these wonderful women whose labor either goes unpaid or unappreciated, or, you know, a lot of these stories are untold. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that we, like, encourage each other to do that, whether publicly or just, like, inviting each other to our homes and talking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's very powerful just being at a tender table. I've only been to two, but just being there and being a part of this intimate space where people are sharing intimate stories about their relationship with food and their culture and their identity. It's very special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it feels pretty obvious that we're all there to become friends, you know, if we aren't already. And that feels really good. Like, I really hope that it is an inclusive space. And so if there are any folks out there who run a space or work at a space that's ADA accessible and, you know, has gender-neutral bathrooms and, you know, any kind of resource like that would be really helpful for the series. POC-owned businesses would be, you know, really wonderful to host in as well. I think it's been a really great project to bring people together, especially, I don't know, I feel like I've become closer to my roots through this project as well.
And I'm sure the people who have presented and are attending have also. I know it's made me think about, after attending a tender table, think about, you know, my relationship with food and, like, think about my parents and, like, the food that they made. And
yeah, and I think a lot about food as a privilege. You know, not everyone is able to enjoy it in this way. Not everyone is able to, you know, to think about food so freely and to have a positive relationship to it. So I also want to acknowledge that, you know, it's not always an easy topic for people. And I hope that those stories will also be told at Tender Table. So if you want to apply, just hit me up.
How can our listeners get a hold of you?
Go to tendertable.com and there's a contact form. And I think only one person has actually used it, but there's also an email address sprinkled throughout the website. Let me know if you're interested in any part of the series.
Cool. Would you also like to tell us about your chapbook, A List of Herbs I Want You to Taste in My Mind in Another Language?
It just came out last month. And it's a long poem about memories and food and family and adolescence and what it means to be in love with someone that, you know, you want to get them up to speed on where you're from, what your roots are. It's a love poem to my partner who I've had to translate different flavors to. Like, it's been really interesting to talk about the difference between herbs, I read this poem once at a reading that Dao Strom had hosted, and I actually got some of the herbs and like passed them around so people can try them. And I like went to Fubon and got them a day ahead. There was this like spiky one, and I think there was, maybe there's basil, and there's like shiso, and the fish wort heart-shaped leaf that my dad likes. And it was really interesting to describe like what these flavors are like, and also translate the names of them, because I only knew them in Vietnamese for a long time. And so I went on Wikipedia and I was like, what is this thing? I just like typed it in Vietnamese and was like, what is this in English? And the names are really wild.
They are. And some of them don't even have English names, I've noticed. Which is crazy.
Yeah, like I didn't know that coriander was a leaf. You know, I just always thought it was a seed.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, that makes sense. Like, where do you think leaves come from? What happens to seeds?
How does telling stories in Vietnamese change the way you tell stories, or like the way it's received in maybe like the company that you have around you when you find yourself telling a story in Vietnamese?
I'm trying to remember the last time I did that. It's funny because, like, I think about telling stories in Vietnamese as, like, a very, it's, like, very colloquial and very of the dailiness. Like, it's not, I'm not telling, like, some grandiose thing about, I don't know. It's very descriptive of activities. I don't know. What's, like, an example?
I totally understand, you know what I mean? What you're trying to say, yeah. But I don't know if I could phrase it any better than
maybe
that.
Maybe I just have like a third grader's level of Vietnamese, and that's why.
I think you're right, though. Like, I'm trying to think. Well, then again, I'm like trying to remember how my parents talked to me, and they probably talked to me as if I had a third grader's, which I do, third grader's level of understanding of the language. So,
well, what's that about then? Because that's something that you both just shared, like,
yeah, like we just got that was cool. Maybe it goes back to the fact that like there's so much unspoken language that comes across, so you don't really have to tell anyone something that's like so obviously palpable in terms of emotion and sensation and perception. You just have to tell them the concrete facts.
It's more focused on like action and showing those emotions through action. Like I'm just trying to think of trying to connect with my parents emotionally and asking my mom or my dad, like, are you happy? And it just seems like when I ask that to them, they respond with, like, why are you asking me this? Like, why does that matter? Like, you are alive and you're healthy and you're well, and that makes me happy, and, you know.
Yeah, or, like, I didn't grow up in a household that said I love you. Like, we don't say I love you to each other, but my mom would like pack a bunch of food and like drop it off at my house, you know, and like she'd do that kind of thing, and that would be I love you, you know.
My mom would cook pho enough for like 18 people at a time and freeze it and drive it down to my brother when he was in college and put it in his industrial size freezer. So that's love. But when we were growing up, they never said, I love you. And they're kind of growing into it more now and saying it more now. But growing up, it wasn't really a thing.
Yeah. Like, we didn't really hug that much. But you know, I start bringing my partner around, then we always hug. So it's been a cool hybrid of, you know, different ways of storytelling. Like, it's interesting to hear my parents telling my partner stories that I've heard before slightly differently.
Mm-hmm.
Or have never heard before, because it would be weird to tell their kid this story. But it's not weird to tell their kid's husband the story, you know? Like, I don't know. It just seems funny and different. Yeah.
And wow. That's our show.
That was our show. That was such a good show. Thanks for doing that interview, Kanan. That was awesome.
Oh, no problem. That was fun.
Yeah, so if you're...
Thanks also to V.
Yeah,
V, if you're out
thanks,
there.
Thanks, V.
I think you're camping.
And Stacey Tran. Thank
and
you so much.
And Stacey. Oh, my God.
Okay, so we got just like 1 minute to do a really quick pitch here. Okay, thank you, everybody who has called in, because for the first time ever, we are like a step away from meeting our goal here on Pacific Underground for the membership drive. Thank you. Thank you. We just need one of you, just one of you to call in, maybe $5 a month or so. This is the moment to become a member of KBOO today, 877-500-5266, because it's matching. We have people who are matching your donation today. So this is the moment to become a member of KBOO, because you just enjoyed that. I enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it. And I spent most of the night editing that. But it was good to listen to, because I knew that it was out on the radio and I knew that everyone was appreciating it.
877-500-5266. Oh my gosh, I just got handed a note that we are so freaking close. We're so close. We're just like $6 away.
Oh my goodness.
Where are you? Where are you? Our $6 donor.
I know you're listening.
We know, because when you listen to Pacific Underground, you know, maybe you're hearing your story. You are hearing your story. You know, you're hearing the stories that you think, oh, what does this have to do with me? Oh, it has everything to do with you. When I hear it, you know, not every single story on Pacific Underground is about me, but in a way it is. In a way it is, just because I'm a person and I like hearing people's humanity. We are out of time, but we just want to say thank you. So $6 person, wherever you're at, give us a call now, 877-500-5266, or go online to KBOO.fm and become a member of KBOO today. Thanks.
Thank you. We love you.
KBOO would like to give a special thanks to our local community partner who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Cafe 11, located at 435 Northeast Rosa Parks Way, a family-friendly coffee shop in the Woodlawn neighborhood of Northeast Portland. Dinner was provided by Dean Nicola's, located at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland, and serving Italian food for over 40 years. For more information on how you can support KBOO,